champ.
Yeah, you can call me that. As I walk with the Luddites, I'm a trusty axe. I'm a whole lot removed from them Domini packs. The packs with the church and the new poll tax. I haven't got the pox, turned 28. My mate's 31, but he's dying from the plague. Life's a bitch right now and I can still hear the hills
resonate,
resonate. Watch my carbon vibrate, mate. And I'm way down the mine in another lifetime, but I don't know how.
Yep, that's right. It's finally happened. I have jettisoned Ken and the other one and finally got my own solo show. Think of it like Ronan Keating going solo from Boyzone. So, first up on this show, you know, I'm going to call this Moth 1. I'm going to get straight into last movies watched. Now, recently, I've mentioned on the show a few times that, on the other show, that I kind of lost the lust and the love. Well, not the love, but some of the passion for Asian cinema. I think I'm feeling a bit of burnout. And so I just haven't really been watching anything. But inspired by my McCrew Smashing Puss in section of the show, where I was talking about Korean TV series that I was trying to get hold of, I watched Miss Gold Digger, which stars Han Yi-sul, who's a Korean TV actress, who was in Couple of Trouble and Forbidden Love, which two of the series I've mentioned before. Han Yi-sul plays a character called Sin Min-ju, who is juggling relationships with four different men. And she's kind of changing her personality for each man. She's kind of, you know, openly to the viewer at least, or through her, you know, hearing her thoughts. She's a gold digger who's interested in, you know, wealth and security and power and being looked after. And so she's stringing these guys along because she sees something that she wants in each of them. So one guy, she's got this nerdy guy who's a bit, you know, all over the shop. But, you know, he seems quite sweet and he's infatuated with her, which he likes. And he's also training to become a lawyer or a district attorney or, you know, some kind of high-powered job. He's trying to pass the bar anyway. And so, you know, she likes the fact that he might be in a strong position and be a powerful man. And then there's the rich guy, who she thinks is a bit ugly and cheesy. But, you know, he's minted. So she loves that. Looking for cars and, you know, diamond rings, that kind of stuff. Then there's the third guy, who's a kind of a cool... Well, all you ever see him do is hanging around at a club, but he's kind of a rapper and dancer and stuff. And he's just, like, cool and good-looking and... That's what she loves about him. And then the fourth is, you know, the guy that seems to stand out as kind of the actual love interest, you know, that you can spot a mile off, who's kind of, he doesn't get sucked in by all her, all the tactics that she usually uses to seduce men and twist them around a little finger and get them to do whatever she wants. Yeah, so I'd say rom-com, but there's not, it's not romantic, it's more com than rom, basically. So there's lots of situations that she gets herself in with all these dates and stuff, and it's pretty funny. And Han Yi-sul does a good job of taking, you know, a character that is not really very sympathetic, you know, and what she's doing, you know, being so calculating and manipulative and so horribly ambitious, but adds just enough vulnerability and kind of charm and sweetness that you can, you know, you keep going with it, you keep sticking with her, and you're interested in her, and you're not hating her totally, really. The main problem with the film is when it gets to the end. because, you know, it's going along, you know, being quite funny. But when it actually gets to the point where, you know, she needs to learn a lesson, or there needs to be a moral or a happy end, or, you know, third act structure, she needs to learn something and change, that's when the wheels start to fall off on the film, really. I mean, the change and the end, the way it comes about, doesn't feel genuine. And one of the reasons why she splits up with one of the guys is, I think it's meant to make you go, oh yeah, fair enough, love, yeah, you're right to drop that weirdo. But I just sat there thinking, poor bastard. You know, the thing that, you know, that she finds, you know, repulsive about him, or stops her feel bad about dropping him, is really tame, and he's so nice in the film. He's such a sweet bloke that, it's just horrible. So overall, I'm going to say that it's an enjoyable film for most of it, for a good, you know, three quarters. Pretty funny, really good performance by Han Yu-sul. She's a real standout in the film. Definitely got a lot of talent. I'm surprised I haven't seen any other films really popping up with her in. But as a romantic comedy, it's deeply unsatisfying in the end, I think. It's a little bit like chewing gum. Filmic chewing gum. You know, you're chewing away and your belly's getting ready, saying, oh yep, there's a nice, you know, good load of food coming down soon, this is tasty. But then actually in the end, nothing goes down and you just get indigestion. Right, so the second film I watched recently was the new flick from Jun Ji Hyun of Windstruck and My Sassy Girl fame, and soon to be appearing in Blood, the Last Vampire, which is her English language debut, which has got action by Kuro Yuen, and and features some stunt work from Chris Jones, who we interviewed on a previous podcast. It's called A Man Who Was Superman, or A Man Wants a Superman. Both English titles seem to be doing the rounds. It doesn't seem to be an official English title yet that I can see anyway. And it stars obviously Jun Ji Hyun and a guy called Hwang Jung Min, who's been in Bittersweet Life, which I mentioned on the show before. So Jun plays a TV producer who has made a career on human interest stories. So one day she's going to film an item when her camera gets stolen, and she screams for help and nobody helps except for a guy in a Hawaiian shirt who's the main man, played by Hwang Jung Min, who saves a bag for her, catches the criminal, and she finds out that he believes he's Superman, and that he's got a piece of kryptonite stuck in the back of his head, which is preventing his actual full Superman powers from being used. So even though he hasn't got his powers, though, he still fights crime in the only way he can, which is, you know, low-level thugs helping old ladies across the road. That's not really crime, but, you know, helping people out in any small way he can. So she sees the opportunity for a good story and gets a crew and follows him around documenting it for the show. It's a kind of comedy drama. I kind of watched it on thinking that it might be a rom-com, because I tend to watch films without knowing too much about it beforehand, because I don't like to have anything spoiled. I like it all to be a surprise for me. But it's definitely not a romantic comedy, I think. It's a drama with good strong comedy elements in it. Because, I mean, Jun Ji Hyun plays it straight through the whole film, really. She's quite hard-nosed and she doesn't really get all emotional. She's definitely, you know, a real opposite to the kind of spunky, fun, you know, crazy, romantic character she kind of played in Windstruck and My Sassy Girl, although, you know, they were still quite hard as well. But yeah, a lot more mature, I think, the character feels in this film. But I mean, the comedy and, you know, the warmth and everything really comes from Hong Jung-min as Superman. I mean, his performance is amazing. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he doesn't scoop quite a lot of awards in Asia this and next year, because he definitely deserves it. I mean, the man has got charm and charisma to burn. He's totally captivating. He, you know, as soon as he's on screen, you know, that's who you're focusing on. And you know, you can imagine this kind of film, you know, you've got a guy who's like an eccentric and you know, he thinks he's Superman, he goes around fighting crime, he's kind of quite tragic and funny at the same time. You can imagine if there's an American version of this, it'd probably be played by like somebody like Robin Williams, and you know, he'd gurn and go hunt, do his 100 miles an hour kind of Mork shtick, and it'd probably be thoroughly over the top and annoying and cloying and sentimental, whereas Hong Jung-min manages to do this role, which could easily go like I've just mentioned, but with real subtlety, so that, you know, when it's time for him, you know, show bits of his past when he was kind of a different person, and you know, different things that happened to him in the course of the film, it's really subtle how things change and how his character changes and his facial expressions and everything like that. It's just really subtle and it's really beautifully done. I mean, I think one of the flaws is when he isn't on screen, it's a little bit, dull might be a bit harsh, but I think definitely the interest and the fun and everything kind of drops when he's not on screen. And it's kind of, you know, yeah, this is good, but when he gets back on, that's when it really shines, that's when it really lights up. To warn you in advance that it's a proper tearjerker. Well, it jerks plenty of tears out of me anyway. To be fair though, at the time, I was trying to remove a bear trap that had got stuck on my testicles. A bear trap was made from raw onion. So that might have contributed. But there was quite a large amount of salty discharge from my eyes at the end, for quite a while. Anyway, it's definitely a great film, and you know, I'm gonna do the usually we did the plug-in at the end of the show, but I'm gonna try and do a rolling plug-in. So my plug to link to this story is for you to check out FarEastFilms.com, as ever, you know, my spiritual internet home, because there's a great review of Man Who Was Superman on there by Hannah Lynn, and it's definitely worth a read. So kind of linked to, you know, the two films I just watched, I was just doing a bit of research and came across the Korean box office for this year so far, the running total. So I thought I'd, you know, share the top 10 with you in a good old fashioned, you know, I love a good countdown, a good list. So all the data from this is collected from KoreanFilm.org. So here we are, number 10, Once Upon a Time in Korea, that has about 1.5 admissions. Number 9, Open City, 1.6 million. Number 8, Death Bell, 1.63 million. Number 7, Sunny. 1.634 million. Number 6, Eye for an Eye. 2 million. Number 5, The Divine Weapon. 3.7 million. Number 4, Forever the Moment. With 4 million. Number 3, the sequel Public Enemy Returns. With 4.2 million. And number 2, so far this year, is The Chaser. In Your Face, Adam Terrell. With 5 million. And number 1 film so far this year in the Korean box office is The Good, The Bad and The Weird. Which is a great name for a film. Which has got 7 million submissions so far. Or admissions even. Okay, so that's the end of my my Korean roundup of the show. Okay, so, you know, doing my own solo show, which is fun and all, but you know, I still miss Kenneth and Stuart, because you know, really, it's them two that do all the work, and then you know, Brains obviously pushes the buttons, and Ken does, you know, really good film reviews and everything, and you know, sounds quite professional on the mic, and I just kind of chip in with a load of bollocks whenever it comes to the top of my head. So you know, I'm missing them too. So I thought I'd have a couple of sections kind of devoted to them two. So the first one is kind of two birds with one stone. This is for Sleazy Ken and you know, my love of Shaw Brothers films. So I would just mention Lost Souls, which is a film directed by an infamous Shaw Brothers, and he did independent films, but I think, you know, some of his most famous stuff is with the Shaw Brothers. T.F. Mo, who, well, actually saying that, I think two of his films, his most famous, are probably Black Sun, The Nanking Massacre, and Men Behind the Sun. He's known for making uncompromising, unsubtle, and violent exploitation films. You know, lots of gore, and you know, usually lots of naked flesh and sex. And so, Lost Souls, I think, features a bit of both. It's about, well, actually, I'm not going to spoil the plot for you, but you know, it's about mainland Chinese trying to get into Hong Kong. And I'll just read you a little snippet I caught off a website. The site is cinematicdamnation.blogspot.com. And here's the quote. The film features everything from a young woman having candle wax dripped all over her naked body, to a woman being raped while spun around, to Chan Shen haggling with a grotesquely obese pimp, to a homosexual sodomy slash birthday sequence involving Chan Shen, who rubs lube on his poor victim before reaming him up the ass. Not quite sure what reaming is. Call me naive. This is all lovingly lensed in some of the most graphic, sadistic detail I've ever seen in a film, with POV shots aplenty. So, I mean, I think that kind of, you know, if that sounds intriguing to you, then I think this is your kind of bag, my friend. You should get on that. I know Ken's already watched it, because I read a quick take review of his from his So Good Review site. But maybe in a future show, Ken will give us a poff review of it. Now for Stewie. Now we all know what Stewie likes. Stewie likes Asian hair and Ek and Cheng. And so, you know, I thought I'd do a bit of, you know, a bit of research on Ekin, see what I could dig up. I did find this on Wikipedia, which is interesting. Do you know, sometimes when you read Wikipedia entries, you think, who wrote this? You know, either, you know, the agent or some PR person linked to the actual actor, or the person themselves has written it. Because, you know, it's just a big old gush fest. This time, it's slightly different on Ekin's page. So I'll read you this quote. Ekincheng's golden age was during the Young and Dangerous era. At the turn of century, his popularity declined and he's been criticised as merely being an accidental superstar. He's also been criticised by some as being a wood-like actor with little expression or feeling in his work. Interesting stuff. I may mention something else about continued movies currently enjoying considerable success, awards, whatever, something about else. I didn't bother reading that. But I stumbled upon a site called ekindream.net, which is an Ekincheng fan site, which points out that it's not affiliated with him. You know, it's not run by anybody from there. It's not unofficial. Yeah. Which is surprising when you consider the detail of some of the posts. Now you gotta wonder how they get this detail. You know, I've got a feeling this is not so much a fan site, more like the diary of a stalker. Okay, October 6th. On October 4th, Ekin celebrated his 41st birthday. That night, Yo-Yo specially wore shorts to show off her long legs. This will be a recurring theme, by the way, on the on these blog entries, what Yo-Yo wore. Yo-Yo being Ekin's girlfriend, in case you didn't know. Together they went to a French restaurant. The next night they met up with friends, including Shan Shan and Jerry Matt Lam, for a seafood meal to celebrate. This year, Yo-Yo attended the celebration as Ekin's girlfriend. However, she still offered to make a birthday cake. Oh, what a sweetheart. No wonder she has a sweet place in Ekin's heart. Last August was Yo-Yo's birthday. Extraneous information. Ekin called friends to help celebrate it. For Ekin's birthday, Yo-Yo took 2 nights to celebrate and wish him long life. On his birthday evening, she wore a white shirt and shorts. That's what we need to know. Showing off her long legs, of course. When they left the restaurant around 11 p.m, reporters asked Yo-Yo whether she had celebrated with Ekin in advance. Ekin immediately rushed to say no. It usually is an ordinary meal. Then they left on foot to walk to where they'd left the car and then returned home. I mean, this is just, you know, so detailed. The next night, Yo-Yo once again accompanied Ekin when he met up with friends, including Shan Shan and her boyfriend. Also, Jerry Lam and his wife joined the gathering. I reckon Shan Shan or Jerry Lam might be a mole. A leak. That's how they get all this information. They all ate seafood to celebrate. This time, Yo-Yo was dressed normally in t-shirt and jeans. Yeah. Everyone enjoyed the evening, which again broke up around 11 p.m. Ekin and Yo-Yo chatted outside the door with Shan Shan and Jerry. Only then did they call a taxi to leave. Jerry and his wife left in Jerry's Fiat K car. I mean, brilliant. You know, I wouldn't have been able to sleep tonight if I didn't know that Jerry Lam drove a Fiat K car. October 18th. Recent reports have indicated that because of the current investment crisis, Ekin's girlfriend had asked him if she could borrow money. The report indicated that she had bought stock because Ekin had persuaded her it was a good idea. Silly Ekin. Because of the stock market decline, she was said to have barely enough money to live on and needed to borrow from Ekin to pay her home loan. The report indicated they quarrelled over this and Ekin had only lent her 200,000 Hong Kong dollars. Tight bastard. Unbelievable. I knew there was something wrong about him. October 23rd. I think this is at the a press conference or something for Claustrophobia, which is a new film with Ekincheng and Karina Lam. And so, yep, goes like this. Ekin and Karina have collaborated together in 4 movies. Karina indicated when they did the first movie, they didn't like one another. But gradually, they have come to have a deeper understanding of each other. And now she feels Ekin is an okay person. High praise indeed for Karina Lam. I mean, there's nuggets of gold like that all over this site. I mean, you know, levels of detail that, I mean, even hardcore Ekin fans surely can't be interested in. Can't be. And just levels of detail which make you wonder how they got this information. I'd be very worried if I was Ekincheng. So I'm going to finish off with another list. So as I mentioned before, I love a list. So this time, we've got... I actually found this on karateparty.org. It's listed as the worst martial art movie names of all time, top 100. But I mean, I don't know. I think some of them are pretty good. And also, a lot of the ones that they list, you know, obviously I'm in the genre and love it. And so I'm reading titles, I'm, you know, well-versed. You know, I've heard many times. Reading titles where they're mocking them or trying to point out that they're weird and thinking, yeah, so, that seems pretty normal to me. Anyway, I'm going to go with the top 20. So, number 20, Screaming Ninja. Now, Ninja's awesome, obviously, but Screaming Ninja, I mean, you wouldn't have thought he'd get much work. 19, the fourth largest Shaolin temple. Not really the most exciting title, is it? Okay. 18, Patrol Horse. Once again, not great. 17, Dumb Boxer. 16, Woman Certain Kill Fist. She's got a certain ring to it, I feel. 15, Black Jim Smashes All. Which the guy who wrote this has put, if you call him that, you can't really blame him. Seems fair. 14, Dirty Ho. Which is a classic. 13, The Hung Boxing Kid. I don't see what's funny about that. 12, Kung Fu Master Named Drunk Cat. Number 11, Shaolin Chastity Kung Fu. Which, I mean, to me, sounds, you know, perfectly normal title. Seems alright, pretty standard. The guy who wrote this has put, this is just a creepy, creepy name for a movie. Ladies, do not go out with a guy who's a member of this college club. Number 10, The Dumb Ox. Number 9, Golden Swallow. You know, that's just childish. Number 8, Hero Defeating Japs. Number 7, Deep Thrust, The Hand of Death. Number 6, Bruce's Fingers. Number 5, Bloody Handkerchief. Number 4, Kung Fu Lung Strikes Emmanuel. Number 3, Letter to Daddy, which apparently is an alternate name for Jet Li's Enforcer, aka My Father is a Hero. Number 2, Tough Beauty and the Sloppy Slop. Brilliant, love that title. And number 1, Against the Drunken Cat Paws. Which sounds totally feasible to me, but the guy who's written this has put, while Tough Beauty and the Sloppy Slop seems crazy at first glance, it doesn't get crazier the more you think about it. Against the Drunken Cat Paws does, and that's why it's the champion. Alright then guys, so that's my mini puff, done and dusted. Hope you enjoyed it, hope it's better than Ken's, and I'll see you guys, well, you know, I won't see you. I don't really want to see you anyway, but, you know, you'll hear me, hopefully, if I don't get sacked, in future podcasts with the gang back together. Adios.